Hello, everyone, and welcome to Queen's Law Pro Bono Radio. My name is Arjun, your host for this episode, and I am a current first-year student at Queen's Law. Queen's Pro Bono Radio discusses interesting and off-center legal topics that aim to make legal discussions more accessible to you, the general public. We strive to stimulate interest and provide information while always being entertaining. This week's topic is medical assistance in dying, or MAID for short. MAID is the process that allows a person who meets certain eligibility requirements to receive help from a medical practitioner in ending their life. This podcast will place a greater emphasis on scrutinizing Bill C-39, which was until recently set to come into force in Canada on March 17, 2024. The bill would expand MAID eligibility to persons suffering solely from mental illness, and it is the topic of much controversial debate, even at present. In fact, the Canadian government recently proposed on February 1st of this year that the date set for Bill C-39 to come into legal effect should be postponed by 3 years, from March 17, 2024 to March 17, 2027. The reason for this postponement is cited to be that the current Canadian health system is not yet ready to facilitate MAID, expanding to persons suffering solely from mental illness, and that more time is needed to safely and successfully implement this change. Joining me today is Mr. Julius Gray, a leading Canadian constitutional law and human rights lawyer who graduated from McGill University and has since appeared in front of the Supreme Court of Canada over 50 different times. Mr. Gray has been very vocal in his opposition against the new MAID laws expanding eligibility to those with mental illness. He has stated that he is prepared to launch a legal action against Bill C-39. He is of the view that the leading case decision on MAID, which is Carter v. Canada, cannot be used to justify expanding MAID eligibility to persons suffering solely from mental health issues, for two reasons. First, MAID requires full and complete consent, and this cannot be given by those suffering from a mental illness. And secondly, the lack of imminence of death for persons suffering solely from mental illness as well. Thank you so much for joining me today, Mr. Gray. It is an honor to be speaking with someone who has such a wealth of experience practicing law in Canada. And let's just jump right in. So the leading case on MAID in Canada was heard by the SEC in its Carter v. Canada decision. In this case, several plaintiffs challenged the constitutionality of the provisions in the criminal code that prohibited MAID under Charter Section 7, which guarantees the right to life, liberty, and security of the person, and also Section 15, which guarantees equality rights. In its decision, the SEC held that the provisions prohibiting MAID were in violation of the Charter and accordingly called for Parliament to strike the provisions down. The court found that the criminal law objective to preserve life and protect vulnerable persons from being induced to commit suicide at a time of weakness was a permissible objective, but it was too overbroad in its effect, as it resulted in prohibiting access to MAID for people who were grievously and irremediably ill, and basically forced them to live despite their intolerable and untreatable suffering. The court's final decision established that Canadians who meet certain criteria do in fact have a right to doctor's assistance in dying, provided that they are adults who are mentally competent, and also that they are suffering intolerably from a grievous and irremediable medical condition. As a human rights lawyer, do you agree with this general idea of MAID that stems from the Carter decision, that it should be available as a human right, at the very least, to those persons suffering intolerably from an untreatable condition, but who retain the capacity to understand and give consent?
I disagree with Carter. I think the Rodriguez case, the previous case, was correct. Mm-hmm. And I don't think medicine should provide death. I understand the issue of intractable pain. And I've always believed that in certain circumstances, you can increase painkiller or psychological drugs to the point where it might be dangerous, but not to the point of conducting an execution. I think the law should not do that, as capital punishment, and it should not do that as MAID. I believe that what it does is it transforms the role of the doctor who is there to relieve suffering, yes, but also to preserve life. It makes it easy for people to be exploited and to be pushed into it. It creates a sort of fashion. You know, one of the things that I find terrible is that MAID has become fashionable among the circles of people who consider themselves cool. And that might increase the number of customers for it. And when you read books, for instance, about how it is administered in Europe, I would suggest a book by Welbeck, La Carte et les Territoires, and McEwen, Amsterdam. You see the soullessness, the danger of MAID. So I'm totally opposed to it, but I think I'm even more opposed to it with mental illness because of it's very rare for mental illness to be to bring about death. So there's no imminence of death. And the quality of the consent is very, very different. I think I'm opposed to MAID, even, you know, I think we should work in palliative care and make sure that people don't have the intractable pain. But I can understand in the case of somebody who may have a week or two left and who is in great pain, that that might be a solution. I can understand the thinking, but I do not understand such an idea in a pediatric context or in a psychiatric context.
Thank you. My next question deals with Section 7 of the Charter, specifically the right to liberty. Now, following the Carter decision, MAID was decriminalized under certain conditions in 2016. This generated debates surrounding the inherent tension between the objectives of the criminal code prohibitions on MAID and the objectives of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Now, on one hand, the criminal law objective is important to protect vulnerable persons from being induced to commit suicide at a time of weakness. On the other hand, the Charter guarantees the right to liberty under Section 7, which promotes individual autonomy and includes the idea that individuals should be free to make important decisions about their life. Now, some argue that the criminal law objective is too paternalistic and denies individuals suffering from mental illness their right to choose how and when they wish to die, which is arguably one of the most, or if not the most, important decisions that one can make about their life. Mr. Gray, in your view, has the legislature achieved an appropriate balance between the right to liberty and the criminal law objective of protecting vulnerable persons from being induced to commit suicide?
It's not the legislature. Well, I mean, the new legislation, I think, is the wrong balance, as is Carter. I think what we forget is that Section 7 is not only the right to liberty, but to security of the person and to life. A person has a right to life. And to stress entirely, or put the stress entirely on liberty, is to forget that Section 7 is there to protect life. And it's one of the most fundamental things. From all philosophical texts in the Bible and everything else, life is sacred. Liberty is always necessarily restrained to some extent. Now, there was a time when an attempted suicide was a criminal act. I think the legislator was right in decriminalizing that. A person has a right to attempt. But when you want to introduce the providing of death to the medical profession, and when you want to subject people to stress from relatives who can no longer put up with them, to all sorts of other people who might have an interest, you know, even, unfortunately, the government, because the last year of life is usually the most expensive from a Medicare point of view. I think that's extremely dangerous. And after you do pediatric and after you do psychiatric, I suppose the next thing, and that makes me shudder completely, is in geriatrics. They're going to say that type of life is no longer worthwhile. And I think that's not right.
That would definitely be very scary. I definitely agree with that. The next issue is Section 15 of the Charter, which guarantees equality rights. Some supporters of Bill C-39 argue that not extending MAID availability to those people suffering solely from mental illness violates Section 15 of the Charter, which guarantees equality rights for people suffering from mental disability. The argument contends that current MAID eligibility discriminates on the basis of mental illness and thus infringes fundamental equality. In Truchon, which is a 2019 decision of the Superior Court of Quebec, brought by two plaintiffs suffering from permanent physical conditions, the managing director of the Institutes for Research and Development on Inclusion and Society acknowledged two things. First, that it is important to acknowledge that under the fundamental principle of equality, that persons living with mental illness, like all other Canadians, want access to MAID, and that their mental illness should not in of itself be an obstacle to accessing a public service available to other citizens. But also, that the inherent right to life of persons with mental illness must also be supported and defended by establishing safeguards and interpreting them strictly. In your opinion, what is the stronger argument in support of MAID eligibility expanding to persons suffering solely from mental illness? That it accords with the right to liberty under Section 7 of the Charter, or that it accords with equality rights under Section 15 of the Charter, and why?
I don't think it's equality rights, because I can see one argument in favor of equality rights, and that is it has been held by the Supreme Court on a number of occasions that you can't discriminate between illnesses. For instance, Paine syndrome, Martin and the Nova Scotia Workmen's Compensation Board has decided that you have to include sort of Paine syndrome that doesn't have any physiological confirmation. B, the judgment of Madam Justice Karakatsanis a few years ago, not exactly well, it is in many ways an equality case, which said that people who suffer from mental illness have to be given the possibility of getting their name struck from the sexual offender list. So there, it is true that mental illness should not serve as a ground of discrimination. But here, it's not a ground of discrimination because the real issue with MAID, as we saw it in Carter, is the imminence of death. And mental illness simply doesn't normally have the imminence of death as one of its features. So I think, if anything, it's a Section 7 argument, but that too is fallacious. It's fallacious under Section 7 because it forgets life and security of the person. It's fallacious under equality because it forgets that what you're depriving somebody of is a right not to suffer an extended agony and die within days, not the right to decide my life's not worth living. You can still commit suicide, I agree. There's still a right to suicide, but I do not think we should involve the medical profession in that.
Now let's talk about the criteria that individuals must meet before they are eligible to access MAID. One of the requirements to be eligible for MAID is that an individual must be capable of giving informed consent. Informed consent involves medical professionals providing individuals with information regarding their medical diagnosis, the available forms of treatment, and alternative options to MAID to relieve their suffering. Informed consent is required both at the time of request and immediately before receiving MAID, subject to certain exceptions, and can be withdrawn at any time. My question for you related to informed consent is, how is informed consent relevant to MAID eligibility? And to follow up, what are some of the legal complications that can arise if a patient has not given their informed consent before they are administered MAID?
Well, informed consent is a very important feature of many areas of the law: sexual relations, marriage, so on, contract for that matter. You have to have your consent to do what you want. I would think there'd be nothing more horrific than the administration of euthanasia without consent. I mean, you do that and you're in 1984. So obviously, if you have MAID, there has to be consent. But the trouble with consent is that it can be reduced, first of all, by pain, by the desire to be free of pain, where somebody might at some point say, this is unbearable. Even though I've been told that it might get better, I can't take another day of it. Secondly, it might be vitiated by pressure from relatives, whether it's people who don't want to keep seeing it and visiting, or people who might want to inherit, or whatever reason it is. This type of consent can be vitiated. Thirdly, informed consent varies. You know, the ability of any particular person to digest and understand medical information. Some will be better than others. I therefore conclude that while if you have MAID, there has to be a provision for informed consent, it does not justify MAID because it's too dangerous, and the informed consent is never as informed as all that. And we all know that we're influenced by the atmosphere around us, the fashionable, the position that is considered cool or sexy at a particular time. And I think we should not deal with death in that way.
And so now we can discuss actually some of the objections to Bill 339 itself. Bill C-39 was previously said to come into legal force on March 17th, 2024, and it would have permitted the administration of MAID for people suffering solely from mental illness. Bill C-7, which is distinguished from Bill C-39, was enacted in 2021 and expanded the maid availability established in Carter to persons suffering intolerably from a grievous and irremediable medical condition, even if there was no reasonable foresight of death. Bill C-39 now seeks to go further than Bill C-7 by expanding maid to allow people with no reasonable foresight of death and who are only suffering from a mental health condition, even those that are treatable, such as depression, to access the service provided that they meet safeguard requirements. One of the main objections against MAID being available to persons suffering solely from mental illness is that those patients are unable to give informed consent to MAID as a result of their condition. The argument is that, at the very least, mental illness interferes with decision-making ability in a non-trivial way and thus renders any consent invalid, even if it is perceivably given. Expert evidence in Trushan established that it is well known that the risk of incapacity is increased where many psychiatric issues exist. As informed consent is a fundamental threshold requirement for MAID eligibility, the objection holds that it cannot be administered to those suffering from mental illness. Now, given that mental illness is a broad term that captures a wide array of different conditions and that different patients suffering from mental illness will have differing rates of capacity, do you think a wide ban on MAID for all persons suffering solely from mental illness is the most effective way of protecting this vulnerable group?
It's the most effective way. I'm not telling you that people suffering from mental illness can never give consent. I can, for instance, very well imagine a situation where people who are suffering from a serious mental illness can nevertheless marry or have sexual relations and so on. So it's not a question that no person can ever give consent, but the providing of death is such an extreme measure that even the risk of vitiated consent should discourage it. And you know, if you think about it, it means if you have it for mental illness, one form of mental illness is severe depression. If somebody says, "My life is not worth living, I don't like it, I'd like to be out of this," and so on, you could arguably say he's mentally ill and therefore suffering from depression, and therefore he can give consent. And if that's the case, anybody can decide that his life should end right now. And that's not what we do. And remember, liberty is limited in various ways to protect people's lives, even though they want to engage in dangerous activities. We have rules about seat belts. We have rules about helmets. We have rules about certain medical procedures. You know, avoiding infections and so on. Remember, people couldn't visit relatives in the hospital during the COVID crisis. So it's not true that liberty is total and physical liberty means you can do whatever you want. You can prohibit all sorts of acts. And I think that insofar as the providing of death, it does not the type of consent, the risk of vitiated consent is enough. You don't have to demonstrate that all the consent is vitiated.
All right. And just to follow up there, do you think that there might be any additional procedural safeguards for persons with mental illness that would be able to mitigate a lack of capacity? And if so, what might those include?
You might make add other procedural safeguards. You might get greater number of doctors. You might have a longer waiting time, but I don't think any of it is adequate.
The second objection is the lack of reasonable foreseeability of death. The reasonable foreseeability requirement to be eligible for MAID was eliminated in 2021 following the SEC's decision in Trushan by Bill C-7. The bill amended criminal code provisions on MAID to allow persons suffering from a grievous and irremediable medical condition to be eligible for MAID even if their condition did not indicate a reasonable foreseeability of death. The reasoning was that requiring reasonable foreseeability of death has the overbroad and grossly disproportionate effect of requiring those suffering from intolerable and untreatable medical conditions to continue living solely because their death is not foreseeable. Critics of this decision object that allowing MAID for persons whose death is not reasonably foreseeable simply encourages premature deaths as an alternative to dealing with issues that could have been potentially managed if given appropriate time and support. This is even more relevant in the context of persons suffering from mental illness who are at risk of internalizing the stigma surrounding their illness and look to MAID as an alternative to living with their condition. Furthermore, research brought forward in Trushan suggests that some patients may seek MAID mainly due to the absence of social supports rather than due to any intolerable aspects of their medical condition. What do you think is the importance of reasonable foreseeability of death that makes it such a necessary requirement for MAID in the eyes of so many opponents of Bill C-7, including yourself, and what constitutional factors support the proposition that the Canadian government should not let consenting individuals living with untreatable mental illness be eligible for MAID?
Well, first of all, I'm opposed to MAID altogether. But if you're going to have MAID, then surely reasonable foreseeability of death is an important condition, because otherwise, think of what it might mean in terms of geriatrics. What's bearable and what's unbearable? Somebody will say, I can't take it, I've become incontinent. And the problem may not be that he can't take it, it's that his relatives can't take it, or that somebody is pushing him to get it over with. What's the point? You can't travel, you can't do it. Does that mean that anybody who is partially paralyzed in an accident and so on can have a resort to MAID? I think that's wrong, and that's it reduces the, I would say, almost the fundamental stress that we have given as a society on life. Life is the most precious thing we all have. And finding utilitarian reasons for doing away with life is not something that we should contemplate. When there is no reasonable foreseeability of death, and people may live for many years, the cutting off of a life is tantamount to capital punishment.
Now, I want to shift from objections to MAID to discuss how MAID is being applied globally. International jurisdictions around the world, such as Belgium and the Netherlands, have already enacted laws that grant MAID eligibility to persons suffering solely from mental illness. Data from Belgium shows that the rate of people accessing this type of MAID is very low. 3% of all MAID requests in Belgium came from individuals suffering solely from mental illness. Furthermore, the primary demographic of people making use of this type of MAID was found to be women suffering from depression and/or a personality disorder with an average age of 47. In a study of 100 MAID request cases in Belgium involving people suffering only from mental illness, 35 met the criteria to go ahead with the procedure. However, 48 of the 65 people who did not follow through with the MAID procedure reported 1 year later that they were managing with some or no therapy and had put their MAID request on hold. This indicates that effective safeguards were put in place by Belgium to curb administration of MAID where threshold requirements were not met by patients suffering solely from mental illness. How relevant do you think international jurisdictions such as Belgium that have successfully implemented MAID eligibility for people suffering only from mental illness are in making a successful constitutional challenge against Bill C-39 in a Canadian court?
Well, they do have it, but I think we can show that it's not a particularly effective sort of thing. I think what we can derive from Belgium, Switzerland, other places, is that there is an increased clientele to MAIDs, whether for mental or other reasons, and it's disturbing. And in Canada in particular, the number of people has been going up. It's become one of the most important causes of death. I think it's a little frightening. And even if you test it just before and just after, just when you make the application and just before you administer it, it's still disturbing to see that so many people choose to end their life in that way. And you have to question their choice. Do they really choose, or are they pushed?
Another factor to consider is public opinion. Public opinion of Bill C-39 has been fairly mixed. According to the Angus Reid Institute, which is a nonprofit Canadian opinion research organization, 51% of surveyed Canadians oppose permitting MAID for those suffering solely from mental health problems. The almost equal split indicates the highly controversial nature of the issue, but despite the polarizing public reception, the legislature has gone ahead with its plan to enact Bill C-39. how much weight do public polling opinions actually have on the policy decisions made by an elected legislature in a free and democratic society? And how much weight do you personally think public opinion should have?
The public opinion obviously has an effect. I don't like to put it as a free and democratic society because I'm not a majoritarian. The charter is not a majoritarian instrument. We have a, maybe most people are in favor of capital punishment too, but I'm totally opposed. And I really couldn't care less whether the majority is for or not. Would oppose it with all my strength. What I've found is that when it comes to the mental causes for maids, most of the people I've met or discussed have grave misgivings. I think most of the people who are in favor of maids in general have succumbed to the sort of what I call the fashionable view and forget that we can expand palliative care. We now have both psychological drugs and painkillers that can make people's last days quite tolerable. That inevitably, as happens with capital punishment, you make a mistake and you can consent to or carry out maids in a situation where in fact something could have been done. So I think if you eliminate this option and if you say, however, we will understand if they increase painkillers to the point where it might be dangerous, but it is not intended to kill, we will have solved the most important points, the most important arguments, which is it's contrary to human dignity, it's dreadful that people don't want this, and so on. I think the reason why people are in favor of it is because they do not realize that by researching methods of administering palliative care, we could eliminate the need for maids.
Now, before we wrap up, I want to discuss a recent development regarding MAID. A Toronto Star article published in January 2024 revealed that the rate of Canadians seeking death via MAID is greatly outpacing the rate of every other nation in the world. It is also important to note that this data does not include any MAID administration to persons suffering only from mental illness. With MAID administration suggested to expand to that group within the next 3 years, another surge in MAID rates is not likely to be unexpected. What do you think are some of the pros and cons of Canada becoming a leader in MAID administration?
I see no pros. I think it shows you a society which has lost its moral compass. We have instead of appreciating life, we have a sort of morbid fascination with death and convenience, and it's part of a society where family structures have fallen apart. Medicare is falling apart or is very too expensive for the governments to administer effectively, and people want tax cuts. So in effect, we're instead of improving our Medicare, and instead of improving the quality of life, we choose for all of these reasons to reduce the scope of life. It is a good reason to be ashamed of our country when we become the leader in the administration of death, and we should not.
And how does this recent development affect your own planned legal challenge against MAID eligibility expanding to persons suffering solely from mental illness?
Well, I haven't planned it yet. It's not in force. It's 2027. Who knows if I will still want to be the lawyer who will take the lead, but there may be others who do it. But I think one of the arguments before the court would be that MAIDS, as it exists right now, is completely out of proportion to MAIDS as it was originally conceived as an extreme measure to make the last few days easier. I think the argument would be made that everything that we have feared about AIDS, about its rapid expansion, about it becoming simply one more tool in the doctor's kit, has come true. And so that would be argued before the courts. I would argue that you were right in Rodriguez. You're wrong to succumb to the arguments about liberty in Carter. And the proof of that is the massive expansion.
Well, Mr. Gray, thank you so much for all your responses today. This wraps up all the questions I had for you. Thank you so much for joining me and providing not only me, but our listeners with your perspective on MAID and its proposed expansion to those with mental illness. Best of luck to you if you do end up making the action against Bill C-39 in the foreseeable future, and I look forward to seeing how the Canadian government approaches some of the issues we discussed within the next 3 years, leading up to Bill C-39 coming into effect.
Well, it's a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Before we end the show, we would like to say that the views expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of the producers, host, or the Queen's University Faculty of Law. This podcast does not contain any legal advice. Pro Bono Students Canada is a student organization, and this podcast was prepared with the assistance of PBSC Queen's Law student volunteers. PBSC students are not lawyers, and they are not authorized to provide legal advice. The podcast contains general discussion of certain legal and related issues only, and if you require legal advice, please consult with a lawyer. Today's show was produced by me, the host, Arjun Kapil, and if you like this interview, you can find more on the Queen's Pro Bono Radio website.